This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. But don't expect us to be nice or politically correct. Nothing is sacred, and the team will be finding the queer and profane wherever we can on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Hello and welcome to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. We have some sad news, ladies and gentlemen. This is our third last show.
Aww. It certainly is.
If you're sad, tell us you're sad, because that would make us happy. You can SMS on 0427 Joy 949.
It won't make us happy. It'll make us less sad.
Less sad. Or
thanks, Jim.
Email on air at joy.org.au. But fear not, we've still got three shows to go. This week we're doing a bit of a NAIDOC week retrospective. Next week we're going to do an election recap. It was going to be this week, but then the election bloody dragged out for so long we had to delay it. And then
we're going to have on the election night special, we're going to have Gareth Hutchins from the Guardian and Crispin Hulls from Fairfax talking to us about what the election meant.
Indeed.
So listen for that next Monday night. But right now we're going to talk about NAIDOC Week and why NAIDOC Week is important, not just for the Aboriginal community, but for the general Australian community and even for the queer community. And we've got a special guest, and we hope we're going to have a special surprise guest later, but we don't know yet because we're not sure whether the mode of transportation is working properly. So, but we have in the studio with us former Joy presenter and Aboriginal activist extraordinaire, Brian Andy. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how you going?
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Or Wamajeka, as we should say. Wamajeka,
yeah. Wamajeka, to speak in the local Wurundjeri language.
Good. Well, we do want to talk about NAIDOC Week. Can you tell us about what NAIDOC Week actually is and what it's done? Because it actually means the National Aboriginal and Island Day of Commemoration, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah. NAIDOC started in the 1930s by the Aboriginal Progressive Association of Australia, and it's a New South Wales-based movement of Aboriginal people, my countrymen, Yorta Yorta people, people from around the New South Wales region and southeastern parts of Australia. They were doing a lot of activism in the 30s, and I think it was 30s, basically. I won't give you a date because I'd be lying, but they staged a day of mourning.
Well, it doesn't
in
really,
Sydney.
You know, the date doesn't really matter in 50,000 years.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. It was before,
I was.
Time, before all of our time. And but yeah, they staged a day of mourning in Sydney, which was held on January 26th, as many of our listeners will know, is Australia Day, or what we call Australia Day. They wanted to mark, I guess, the 150th anniversary of the invasion of Australia, and they called it a day of mourning, and that was the starting point for NAIDOC Week. And it was a political activist-inspired activity in Sydney, and then it became, a celebration of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture as time went on since the 30s.
I think the former governor of South Australia and William Onus were also heavily involved, weren't they?
Yeah, people like Sir Doug Nicholls, who was, the former governor of South Australia. Get all nepotistic or, but he's, a countryman of mine, a Yorta Yorta man from Kamaragunja, which is where I'm from. And, people like Sir Doug Nicholls, William Onus, Bill Patton, who else is there? William Cooper. They're all kind of active. And also women, too. I've got to remind us of the women. People like Marge Tucker were all strong Aboriginal activists in the 1930s, 1940s. And they, brought about this observance of saying, hey, we're still here. We need our rights observed or honoured. And so that's how NAIDOC started back in the 30s through this day of mourning.
It's also really important, isn't it? Because it actually gives a living face to Aboriginal history, which has managed to survive white settlement and
Yeah, we're pretty
50,000 years of being squatted on this land.
Yeah, we're pretty good at suppressing Aboriginal aspects of our history in this country. And, you know, I mean, I had to go to university to sort of look at it myself or hear it from my elders directly. But it's really hard to access Aboriginal history. And so NAIDOC is an important time that we hold in July, but also just a really important way to access an understanding of that political history, but also of why we, you know, celebrate Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture today. And yeah, so very important.
At the beginning of the year, we spoke a bit about the Pride March, and as part of the Midsummer Festival, and how there's still this tension between people who, like, whether we can ever purely celebrate something or whether there's always a political element or element of mourning or stress. I'm wondering, you were saying how NAIDOC started as a protest and now is a celebration. Can we have both? Should we alternate? Can we do both at once? What do you think
I think
that?
I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like, it's about finding that balance and celebrating our achievements, celebrating our political milestones, those watersheds that we all share in our history, in an Indigenous sense or in a non-Indigenous sense, in a gay sense. And so, you know, I mean, I'm being Aboriginal. There's something that is core to my being, and that is you respect your elders and you respect the legacy that they created for you. I mean, I wouldn't be here yarning to you all on air at Joy if it weren't for the tenacity, the resistance, the fight that my elders gave me. I mean, even today I was reading a blog about my grandmother's country from Wiradjuri country, which is in central New South Wales, and there was this really lovely, simple, short blog by this non-Indigenous guy who just acknowledge the fact that there were massacres on my grandmother's country, and we are survivors. So, you know, my grandmother survived that onslaught of the invasion and colonisation, and that's really important to sort of honour that and acknowledge that, and again celebrate that in the sense of we have survived. And you can take that in an Aboriginal sense, you can take it in a gay sense or a, you know, a queer sense, and yeah, run with it.
Cool.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Hello, you are listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9, and we have a new guest.
We do. As I warned you at the beginning, dear listeners, dear Joysters, I said we may have a very special surprise guest, and we do.
It's very special in here.
It is very special in here. Somebody went to special school, obviously. But anyway, in the studio with us now, sitting between me and Brian, is Uncle Jack Charles, who is an Aboriginal actor preeminent in Australia. He's one of the most well-known faces, and he's certainly bloody well known after he got his heart ripped out on Clever Man a few weeks ago.
Poor fella.
He's looking well.
I had a moment when that happened. It was, yeah, it was very sad.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm doing well in the series because at the same time they showed Clever Man, the first episode, they showed my series in Wolf Creek and also in Rake. And that's how I've been picked up a lot by the business, you know, writing me in little cameo roles.
Well, that's
which is
good,
a great respect for me, I believe. It's a good thing.
No, well, you're a seasoned actor. You're an amazing performer in both film and on the stage. And can I just sort of point out, too, that, I mean, sorry to take over, guys, but
no, go right ahead.
Uncle Jack is a gay man, and it wasn't until, I mean, he's always been a part of our community. Like, I've known Uncle Jack for over 20 years, I think, mm-hmm. having lived in Melbourne most of that time, and known Uncle Jack from, you know, theatre, film, etc., but he's actually gay, and it wasn't until he released his documentary Bastardy, which, you know, was promoted in the gay press, and I was like, this is, you know, deadly that Uncle Jack's been promoted in the gay press, but why is that? Read the article, and he's a gay man, so I just want to kind of put that out there too.
I hadn't really intended.
That's a great way to come out.
Yeah, I hadn't really intended to out myself.
You didn't really intend to out
but
yourself.
I noticed it happening when I first saw it on the first we had two premiere nights at the Melbourne International Film Festival in 2008, such were the crowds lining up around the block. And so, and when I first saw it on the first night, you know, it blew my mind that I had, you know, unwittingly outed myself in so many different ways here.
It was
a documentary that White Australia needed to see.
Well, the truth will out
one person's journey. and that, you know, and I never lingered much on my homosexuality, but it's embedded in many of the scenes that you see in Bastardy, in the documentary, and the comments I make.
And I can remember the first time I met you, Uncle Jack. I bowled up to you fanboy-like at the Northcote shopping centre when we were doing our shopping. And said,
one of the many men that approached me at the night.
The cruise inside.
Isn't that good? And I asked him to come on Joy, and he said, yeah, sure.
So no, when I first came into Aboriginal Melbourne, my second entry into Aboriginal Melbourne during the late 60s and early 70s, I remember walking in with my mate Jack, his name was Jack too. He had a caftan on, and I was walking, you know, we were holding hands along the dirty, dirty mile there. With me in crushed yellow velvet flares. So I thought there was a little bit. So I was standing, you know, it seemed, and my perfect diction.
And you weren't out.
Separated me. Yeah, and separated me from the mob and that, you know. I can't have expected everybody, you know, in prisons and things like this, and everybody knew that I was gay. I assumed everybody knew it.
Well, you knew, so why should everybody else?
Yes. So, and everybody's accepted it. Nobody's been jumping my bones about it.
We like the idea.
Nobody raped me while I was doing all those 22 times incarcerated, and all those times in there, nobody had ever...
That was research.
You know, who would want to rape the scribe? Because that was my first job, looking after the guys writing their letters, and that they couldn't write, so they asked me to write their letters for them.
So you were able to tell their mums exactly what they were up to?
Yes. Con them. Yes. But, yes, we've got a new government in, and they're hard set on doing this, what do they call it? They're going to ask people to vote on the plebiscite.
They are.
That's going to cause disruption. And that. The same thing goes, with Abbott push to rush through a change for the constitution. Mm-hmm. You know, I have this freaky idea that we just cannot ask white Australia to vote yay or nay on anything indigenousness not wise until, you know, we've had here in Victoria, we're about to bleed onto the Victorian schools curriculum, the story of Corranderk, the first Indigenous, you know, early Victorian Aboriginal history, early settler history, post-invasion and that, you know.
When William Barrack becomes a real hero of the Australian community, then it might be somewhere towards getting reconciliation.
And just back to that point, I guess, that you raised earlier around, I guess, what's the parallels between, say, an Aboriginal identity and a queer identity or a gay identity? I mean, if you look at those issues of the plebiscite and this constitutional recognition or a treaty, there are parallels that you can see in terms of we as gay people or we as black people are rights holders, and we have the right to say, this is what we want. We don't want a plebiscite. We want marriage equality as, you know, given by the parliament, because that's your... I guess that's your mandate as leaders of this country. Similarly, we want a treaty when it comes to our people. We don't want constitutional recognition. We don't want to be consumed by the non-Indigenous system without our sovereign rights being recognised. So there are similarities that we need to, I guess, point out and feel safe in as queer people, as Aboriginal black people, as those of us blessed with both identities. We need to, you know, kind of acknowledge that we have rights that we need to say this is what we want, and why should we as Aboriginal people give ourselves over to the, you know, democratic process, voting public, that will vote against us?
I remember
why
Celeste,
should we do that as queer people too?
I remember Celeste Liddell, you know, the fabulous black feminist ranter, telling us on air one night that, that, you know, reconciliation was a white person's issue.
Yeah.
And that we need to get our heads around reconciliation. Not Aboriginal people don't need to get their heads around reconciliation. They've reconciled enough.
Yeah, true. I mean, look at, say, some place like South Africa where apartheid existed, and it was actually influenced by the policies and legislation of Queensland. Surprise, surprise, in terms of how do you segregate a people in terms of races. And apartheid in South Africa was influenced by the policies in Queensland. And, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, so you... yeah, it's, I mean,
that's spooky.
It's sort of unbelievable, isn't it?
But it is.
It's unbelievable,
but the way that, yeah, I guess my point I wanted to make was just that at the end of that post-apartheid era, they went through a process of truth and reconciliation, and we've got this half-assed reconciliation notion that was
without
government-led.
The truth part.
Without the truth part.
And every time anybody says anything about a massacre or genocide, everybody goes, oh, no, don't say that, don't talk about that, and carry on when we all know it's true.
Yeah. Well, you see, you've got to go hard. You need bastards like me in particular to be in that right situation. I told Australia-wide on Q&A that it had to get used to the word racism. The response against Adam Good's behaviour and the offside behaviour by the fans is a direct result of the chronic lack of education in our schools curriculum and of Indigenous history. We know the stories in our Aboriginal history. We can source all the stories, the proof of evidence from our parliamentary libraries of letters written during those days by both black and white people into Parliament. It's all there for the reading, history. So we've developed Corindirk to begin that process. So, Victoria, thank you. We're setting the bar here. You know, I suppose Secret River has already been studied by New South Wales children and that, you know, and etc. The story of the Darug people, you know, so continuously over the years it's been the writers, the actors, the performing black artists, the Bungara dance that have been telling Indigenous history over
many years.
Which
is why story is so important, isn't it? And story as a central part of Aboriginal culture should become a central part of Australian culture.
It's
the great gift of Aboriginal people to Australia.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be limited to just that arts and culture scene. I mean, I think we are in the midst of a political renaissance in Australia where we are under a conservative government. We've been under a conservative government, and Aboriginal people are asserting this demand for a treaty. We're not talking. We've actually rejected constitutional recognition.
Is the election of Linda Burney a major step, or is it a?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a watershed in the sense that she's the first Aboriginal woman to occupy a lower house seat. I understand. Yeah,
she is. Yeah,
and so yeah, so that's great in that sense. She's been a state MP. Within the
New South
Wales
government.
She was
deputy leader of the Labor Party.
Yeah, exactly.
And so
she's a pretty skilled woman.
She's a woman. That's a great thing. She's Aboriginal too, and so I think it's very important that she's in our federal parliament be a voice for our cause. Because again, outside of constitutional recognition, to use that term, but also just outside of any structure that acknowledges us politically through a treaty, we need people like Linda to be there to be that voice of reason within that democratic system that doesn't always factor us in, like in the queer sense too.
I've worked with her and she's really quite a spectacular person.
She's amazing, yeah? She's very much so.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
So you are on It's Nothing Sacred, Joy 94.9. We're talking about NAIDOC Week, but more than that, we're talking about Aboriginal history, Aboriginal culture, what it means here and now.
With people who are actually making it.
With people who know what they're doing. and we were talking before a bit about Corindirk, and I was wondering if you could share a bit more about why it's important, what it is, and,
Queen Victoria had given William Barak a plot of land for the loss of Melbourne. When they wanted to move everybody out of Melbourne, they shunted up into different missions around Victoria, six of them there were. Some of the younger ones were culled from this group of blackfellas from all over Victoria, and they were trained to be the Victorian Native Police Force.
They were sent in, weren't they?
And there's a lot, not a lot has been written about them. But the retirees of that mob, right, had settled down, had gotten older, had started to well, we're in the back into the community centres and that, you know, as a retirement program. Queen Victoria, you know, had honoured William Brack, not only for the loss of Melbourne, but for services rendered, perhaps, with his duties in the Victorian Native Police Force. And many members of my great-greats were also members of that great of that police force. And they're on their retirement, they settled down at one of the six surrounding stations in Victoria, many of them in Corranderk, my great-greats. And they made a success of that farm. We were there to toss in those places to kill ourselves and to expected to die out. But we bred, we educated ourselves in these missions. We developed the land. We grew the fattest in Corranderk, the fattest and bushiest of hops for the Melbourne Brewery, winning first prize for the Royal Melbourne Show in 1880. And so the squatters around Hillsville were really envious and quite pissed off over the blackfellas being so successfully working the lands, earning a quid, selling produce into that town of Hillsville, that they did all manner of naughty things to try and make them look as though they couldn't work the land. They'd pull down the fences, destroy the crops, trying to move the people off their land, and shooting the odd blackfella that was off country. For instance, my great-great-grandfather, John Charles, was shot. You know, if you're off the mission, you were still fair game in those days for the Sunday after church shoot, the hunt.
Well, you weren't a real person, were you?
You weren't a real person, so you were shot just as much as the kangaroos were being hunted with their greyhounds and etc. in those days and that, you know. Oh, yes, this was going on. And the other thing is now, you know, we're bleeding this story onto the school's curriculum. Right, year 10 and 12, we've been performing it for droves of them in various schools around Melbourne and into the hinterland of suburbia and that, and they're relishing, they're absorbing it, they love it and that, because this has not been allowed to be told them.
But it's also their history as well.
And it's their history, yeah. So that's going to be bled in. I'm so pleased that this is happening.
Are you writing it?
No, it's written by a descendant, Andrea James, a descendant of William Brack himself. She's a playwright, and so she wrote the play, researched by Melbourne University people, Andrea Giordano Nano, and developed by La Mama Theatre. With the Albidgery Theatre too, developing another show, a six-actor one. But the show basically is that the actors in it, in the La Mama production and the Albidgery Theatre production, say the exact words that were spoken and given in evidence at two royal commissions that took place in 1880, one on Corranderk soil and one in Parliament. And they had written so many letters of complaints against the Aboriginal Protection Board, against the squatters' behaviour, against the management, against the fact that so many of their young ones were dying of pneumonia because there weren't enough blankets to be
given. Am I right or wrong in believing that William Barrack then led a march from Corranderk to Melbourne?
Yes. We had Tommy McRae, many people were scribes, and wrote these letters for many people in that place. And when you write to Parliament, even today, if so many letters are written in, Parliament has to act on those letters. So in 1880, they had these two commissions of inquiry into the management and to decide upon the future of the residents at Corranderk, the exact words.
And if people don't know who William Barrack is, all they need to do is to walk over to the end of Swanston Street and look up at this really huge apartment, very luxury apartment building for Melbourne's rich. Mm-hmm. And on the front of it,
genius work of art,
and if you stand down at the shrine and look,
great respect by architects of Melbourne, whoever that mob is, to acknowledge that William Brack, last warrior rung leader, And that, so there, I do both William Barak in both productions of Cora Dirk, I mean, at La Mama and Il Bidri. And in Il Bidri's production, I speak his lingo. He did it in his, you know, his petition in lingo. And so I do it in the Woiwurrung language that he spoke. Of course, taken directly from the text, from the transcripts of the Royal Commission.
Was it hard to get your tongue around those words or not? Or did they come back into your head?
They come, yes, yes. Sometimes I'm required to you know, perform, you know, over in Noongar, to speak Noongar language or Yora language or Darug language and et cetera around the country. But it's only, you know, for that period of time, even for Clever Man, I was supposed to, you know, I did a bit of language for that too.
That was a Western New South Wales language,
Yes.
So that's fantastic.
So, yes. So Australia's, look, you know, there's more stories that we can, you know, we've been dying to tell the stories to white Australia right round the country for many years, you know, touring just Jack Charles versus the Crown around the festival sites around Melbourne, I mean, around Australia, over in the west where all the South Africans settled over there.
And you took it to London.
And took it over to the mother country, the mother bloody country.
Not your mother country.
Not our mother country.
Not our mother
Dublin,
country.
And, you know, I've been back 3 or 4 months from Canada. It was the ultimate destination to hit Canada with Jack Charles versus the Crown.
How'd they receive it there?
They loved it. Standing ovations every night in every performance. Liberated.
Well, they do actually have an Indigenous state now.
Yeah. I met all their elders and et cetera, and they have problems with the equivalent of our Stolen Generations. The residential schoolies come out, much like me coming out of Box Hill Boys Home after abuse and that, and continuing the abuse of their fellows and etc. So it's they've got big, especially in Ottawa and Vancouver. They've got these organisations there run by these community centres. And that, you know, and this is the basic fact. We're missing out on these community centres. We once had them in the 70s, but they've all disappeared from the landscape in every village, in every town and city. Our communities have been abandoned.
Are the Stolen Generations community groups still running or not? Are they
They're supposed to be running, but they're done by NGOs, white people, etc.
Of course.
So it's not... They're
the
not
people
really
with the skills, you mean.
Connecting homes doesn't connect people to homes.
Not necessarily, Jim. Yeah, I wouldn't suggest... I mean, actually, that's the problem within Indigenous Affairs is that a lot of NGOs are getting into our space and monopolising our money and using it for their administration. And, you know, when you talk about rights, there's a central tenet to rights, and that's self-determination. And self-determination is ensuring that Aboriginal people are funded accordingly to heal. And you have organisations like the Healing Foundation nationally that help with, I guess, healing in a more general sense.
Who's its CEO?
Oh, I'm not sure. Oh, actually, it's a woman, and I'd be lying if I told you who it was. But then, I guess, on a state level, there's like Connecting Home, and there is a real issue across the country when it comes to non-Indigenous NGOs who are, again, you know, winning the tenders, government tenders for funding to service our community, and they often come with a religious, a political lens that isn't honouring self-determination.
And it's not, you know, culturally responsive too. Mm. I had to fight tooth and nail against Connecting Homes in the protection of my nephew after they did sod all for my brother Archie. You remember Archie, my brother, walking around cold like that, you know. Well, he was given 2 large care packages from Big Cat to care for him, but they failed at their duty in that one. So I've made a response to them. I says, that they tried to get one of my nephews into their care, and they were going to Melbourne Court to have him delivered to them. So I I threatened the Aboriginal advancement, Aboriginal affairs people. I said I would sue that mob if they had anything to do with the charges against. So they stopped.
Good on you.
You need buggers like me. The same thing goes. I'm still fighting this taxi issue, mate.
Mm. I'm glad
you know
to hear
about
that.
The taxi
we do know about the taxi.
So the point is, it's very sensitive. When you want to work from behind, when you don't want to be in their face and actually sue the three particular gentlemen that became, it became global. You know, if I fart over here in Australia, it gets reported in the BBC in Canada nowadays.
As it should.
As it should, I suppose. So the point is, so I want to bleed onto the Victorian schools, taxi training schools, their driving training schools, cross-cultural awareness program delivered by a Torres Strait Islander Aboriginal person. I know who we're going to use. You know, so they're waiting in the wings, these people that can deliver this service to the taxi driving training schools. Mm. I want to do it. Richard Franklin wants to do a little bit of it too, to introduce the program to the taxi driving training schools.
We are going to continue this conversation, but we need to have a little break.
All right, okay.
And we would love to hear from you if you have questions for Brian or Jack. Please SMS on 0427 joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi there, Joysters. This is Jim, and I'm in the studio with Steph and James, Brian, Andy, and Uncle Jack Charles. And we're talking things Aboriginal tonight, and we were just discussing before we went to those messages about casual racism. I think that's the white term for it, isn't it? Casual racism.
It's a bit of a euphemism, isn't it?
It's a terrible euphemism. What's casual about being denied services?
I think it's casual like you have casual work, like it just could strike at any time. You don't know when you're going to get it.
And people don't know they're doing it because it's just part of what's ingrained in them, because that's what they've been brought up to do.
From observations and years' experience, the idea, I've got it nated now. I'm keeping a black watch on those that have sought sanctuary from the continent into our country that have become taxi drivers. In the main, these are the culprits that are disrespecting our people, disrespecting me. I've become now so paranoid because I look obviously who I look like. And so I believe from that moment, immediately after being awarded the Victorian Senior Australian of the Year and that disrespect by that cab driver to ask me for that amount of money when I had this taxi driver, voucher.
A government one and all.
Yes, a government one by the Australia, you know, awards people, it's time for me to to address this situation once and for all. It's very sensitive. Nobody likes to be called racism. Mm. I declared him to be a racist when he immediately after he asked me to pay a sum of money. It's a ploy these kind of people use. I don't like saying these kind of people, but it's a ploy.
We know what you mean.
It's a ploy that taxi drivers can use to keep you out of your taxi.
But also you've got to think about it in the context of the culture and where it's bred, and that is, I guess, just to be to stereotype or to generalise, Australian culture is racist.
Yeah.
It was built on the foundations of racism, so taxi drivers and a lot of members of our society are, I guess, privy, for want of a better word, to this education, this culture that is racist, and that
you could argue also
everybody
that
the indigenous people
who are from Sri Lanka or southern India should be very aware, because the racism against Tamils and the untouchable,
as though we're the lowest caste.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And if
untouchable. If
you do the DNA, if you do the DNA analysis, funnily enough, they are on the same branch as Aboriginal Australians. And there are words in Pitjantjatjara which are same words in Tamil.
Well, I think, there you go. So it's a point that we are brothers in arms. This is what we need to. I need to be able to talk to taxi drivers personally, go over to Essendon Airport over there where they all congregate and stand on the soapbox and start talking to them, because I'll be telling them, your sons and daughters here in Victoria at our public schools, at our private schools, are going to be aware of Indigenous Victorian Aboriginal history. Get on board, Mum. Get on board, Dad. Mm. You know, because they're going to be learning Victorian Aboriginal history, and maybe you'll develop a semblance of respect that we've been crying out for over 200 years.
So you're going to have a short version of Corindook to go to all the old folks' homes and things like that, so that older people can actually hear their own history?
We bus them in. You know, Aboriginal theatre, we have community nights, and they're free.
I mean white older.
Well, you know, community nights, anybody can come in, you know. I mean, pensioners. You know, we do it down at the Fairfax Studio. When we do show down there, we have community nights down
at
there.
At the Arts Centre, yeah.
And everybody comes in.
I'm coming next time.
Yes, come in next time. You know, the pensioners. We should make a bigger play for that, mate. We did it over in Canada. They've never done this, never seen this idea before, that we'd have community nights. I said, well, we're an Aboriginal theatre. We insist wherever we perform, we have two community mm-hmm. nights, you know.
That's the thing, and it's a great promotional marketing vehicle.
It's a great marketing idea.
You're just like, you know, bringing people in the dress rehearsal, for want of a better term, and just, you know, let
and
them experience something and they talk about it.
In Calgary, no, in Ottawa, they're all screaming out. They're all drunks and, you know, on some substance and all that. But it, you know, really lifts
they
up the show.
Well, they've probably got tea and scones as well out in the foyer. Yes, so it was a good reason to go. Yes. Scones are just damper, after all.
Yes. Well, that's true. Yeah, just with a bit of butter through them.
We do have a message that has just come through from Maria, who says, what was the name of the beautiful song played at 10:45? I tuned in and my Shazam didn't pick it up.
It was Jeffrey Unipingu.
Gurumul
Jeffrey Unipingu, if you go to your favourite music service. And it's called Jarimiri, which is spelled Jarimiri.
Yes.
Jarimiri, which is a Yolngu word from Arnhem Land. And he's a really beautiful song.
He's just an amazing performer. To see him live, he was at the Arts House in as part of the Melbourne Festival a few years back, and he's blind, and just the way he evokes and sings up country as a blind man just, I guess, is a testament to Aboriginal oral traditions. Like, I mean, that aside, he is an amazing performer.
Mm.
Mm. I think our show has sadly almost come to an end. We do have one more beautiful song coming up, but I think it's time to say goodnight. This hour has flown. You are amazing, sir. Thank you for telling us so many things. I learned a lot, Charles.
Coming in. Yes, yes.
And thank you to see. Oh, he's almost Uncle Brian Andy these days.
Oh yes, yes.
I can see grey in that beard, Brian.
Jim, let's not go there.
And thank you, James, for pushing all those buttons.
No worries, guys.
And thank you, Steph, for coming in.
Thank you, Jim.
As we said, this is one of our last shows. We'll be on again next week and the week after. So please stay tuned on Monday nights at 10 to hear more of Rat Baggery.
Thank you so much. Thank you again for this evening.
You
have been listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. Good night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.